Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back with us Dr. Amit Goswami. The book today is God is Not Dead. We're reading between the lines. God, what quantum physics tells us about, is not our origins and how we should live. So today we're going to explore how consciousness, quantum physics, and our view of what our reality are all fit together. Welcome, Dr. Goswami. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Susan, for being given me this opportunity of talking with you again. It's always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Well, we start out with your book, a conversation between you. A conversation between a Christian theologist and a Western philosopher and a materialist scientist. And would you like to just introduce to the listener today the different viewpoints and how you propose to bring them all together?
Well, the three viewpoints are quite distinct in their opposition to unification. Unification meaning that we today suffer from a divided worldview. I guess all listeners know that. One is the Christian religious worldview of a very personal God sitting on a throne, affecting human beings on the judgment day, throwing rewards of punishment at them, that kind of very simplistic view of the reality. And God-centered, not at all world-centered. This is the reason that many people find it not so appealing today. And the other view, which is materialist science, which is matter is everything. So the book starts with first the concerns of the matter is everything people who, of course, point out that religions cannot even agree about what God is, and therefore how come they're ever be science proving it. And the philosophical concern is a little bit different from the theologian. Theologian's thing is that, you know, it is this personal God. So they don't want a very general view which will include science in their view of reality. And the philosopher view is a little bit different, which is that how can science at all be brought into because spirituality then will probably be compromised. Their fear is that philosophy will be compromised if science gets seen in a major way into spiritual concerns. But all this is allayed because there is no way, either from a spiritual point of view or from a religious point of view, to keep philosophy and science separate, or religion and science separate. It will always suffer from these two worldviews because there is no compatibility between them. You cannot, everything is God philosophy and everything is matter philosophy. If you hold on to the idea of a personal God, you just can never hope to bridge the gap. Impersonal God, objective God, that esoteric philosophical traditions propose, that is a very interesting suggestion because it is as non-dual as the idea of matter is everything. And that's also non-dual. But the problem is that one still cannot find the connection. And then the big breakthrough, of course, that I devoted the whole book to is that quantum physics resolves these difficulties of the esoteric spiritual traditions, esoteric philosophy. Quantum physics shows how to found a theory of science, theory of everything, within the idea that consciousness is the ground of being. But this picture of God as consciousness, as a non-local consciousness that is transcendent, transcends normal space-time reality. This idea is, of course, a monistic idea, very different from the idea of a personal God that religions preach, and this is where the problem is. But what I found out in the book, that religions also agree with some things, which is, one is that God has power, downward causation. There is causality other than matter. And second thing that the religions agree upon is that there are subtle domains of reality. Our experiences of feeling, thinking, and intuition, these also indicate the subtle dimensions of reality. And the last thing is the most important thing that religions always have emphasized and taught, which is that values are important. So the integration is important because these three things all can be revived with the quantum integration of science and spirituality. So what religions really value, that is already revived. And therefore, all the religions have to put up with their prejudice about a personal dualistic God. And what science has to give up is their dogma about matter being everything. But actually, nothing is lost for the science, and nothing is really lost for the theologian reader. And philosopher, more or less, is worried about the wrong thing. So quantum physics actually integrates all of the concerns. That's what the book is about.
Well, let's start with consciousness as the ground of all being, because I think that's a very important concept to start with. In science, we learn that animals and humans have brains, and brains, I guess go ahead and describe the idea of upward causation that we're taught in school versus what quantum physics teaches us about downward causation.
Yeah, that is the basis of everything, so let's begin there.
Okay.
The materialist model is a Newtonian model. Newtonian
mm-hmm.
being deterministic, and physical laws determine everything, that kind of idea. And matter is everything begins then with elementary particles, and the idea is elementary particles make aggregates called atoms. Atoms make molecules. Molecules make these cells of our body, living cells. And then these cells, some of them are neurons, they make the brain, and brain makes consciousness. So if you take this kind of view, the problem is that you cannot solve the quantum physics-wise, this just does not make sense, because then you come to the impasse. Elementary particles are nothing but possibilities, so possibilities make only possibilities. So brain is just possibility. So the question is consciousness, just possibility. So the question is, how does this possibility, quantum physics says everything is possibility, so how does possibility ever become actuality? This question mm-hmm. becomes a difficult question for scientific materialism to handle. So this model is called upward causation model because elementary particles have the real cause. Their interactions is producing the atoms. And then we can talk about atomic interactions, but they really are elementary particle interactions. That's the only basic causality. So we call it upward causation. Cause rises upward from the elementary particle. So in quantum physics, we then end up with just possibilities with upward causation alone. We don't have any answer to how actuality comes in. So what then one has to posit, metaphysical assumption, that there is something that makes the possibilities into actuality. If you do it as assuming that God is personal and God does it, that doesn't quite do it, because the problem is that how does God interact with matter? Interaction requires a signal. So God cannot be that way, separate from matter. But the problem is resolved if we take this very general view that consciousness or God is the ground of all being, and matter is possibility of God itself. Matter is possibility of consciousness itself. Matter is not separate from consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Then consciousness can choose from something that is not separate from it, and therefore requires no signal for this choice. And then consciousness can make possibility into actuality by choosing one facet out of the many faceted object that a possibility wears. Yes. So consciousness chooses. This idea is the idea of downward causation. A downward causation, because this is a consciousness, higher than our usual ego consciousness. it's coming from a higher consciousness, and therefore we call it downward cognition. So that's the story. So that, as you see, we get God's power, God's God of power. So basic concern of spirituality, religious tradition is saved. And similarly, we get matter playing a very vital role, because matter is giving us the waves of possibility to choose from. So both camps get something very important. Matter gets some role, and the traditions also, religious traditions also get a role for God.
One of the things in the books that actually was very important for me, of course, I've read your previous books, and the concept that explains why God allows bad things to happen, you know, that question, that age-old question, why did God allow the Holocaust to happen, is well answered in this book, and that caught my attention. Basically, the idea that God creates from the possibilities, perhaps for our learning, so that we can then bring down what we call these archetypal, more important qualities like love, justice, you know, beauty. All of the archetypal things we're learning from pretty painful lessons in third dimensional reality to bring down a different quality into the third dimension. And that would be that really does explain why bad things are allowed to happen. And the answer is because we have to learn to choose differently.
It's part of the learning pain. You were very observant. Yes. And you can put it a slightly more sophisticated way by pointing out that evolution of consciousness is actually bringing heaven, these heavenly qualities in manifestation in us. So its purpose of evolution is just that. Darwinism is not the last word about evolution. Evolution of consciousness has to go beyond Darwinism, and we already have evidence for it. Evidence is, of course, these fossil gaps. They have to be explained as quantum leaps in evolution, certain jumps that causes macro speciation, change of one species to another, which is very, very, very related to the previous stage. So many changes, profound changes. And those profound changes cannot take place gradually, and there are no fossils anyway to show that there was gradual change. So the idea is that the change must have been sudden, quantum leap, discontinued, instantaneous change. So if you see that and realize that all creative discontinuous changes take place, we can literally say that it is the creativity of higher consciousness. The entire species wakens up to creative response to the situation that has been created. So when you recognize these quantum leaps, we also recognize that human beings must change the same way. How our mind operates have changed over the periods of human evolution. Human anthropological data shows this, that we have gone through hunter-gatherer stage, then a horticultural stage, and then an agricultural stage. And in each stage, mind has changed. Mind used to first operate in the arena of the physical. We call it physical mind. When we are hunters and gatherers, it was very important to know about the physical world. And then we started horticulture, small-scale agriculture. Men and women worked together in the fields, and that relationship brought about a lot of feelings. And then we started giving meaning to these feelings. So mind became a vital mind. And then with heavy agriculture, started a new phase where mind started thinking about mind itself, giving meaning to meaning. That's the abstract thinking, that rational thinking that we are so proud of, and that's what we do today. But the next stage is coming. Next stage is when mind puts in attention to intuition. Intuition of what? Intuition of these values, these archetypes, love, beauty, justice, truth. So that's when the spiritual age is going to come. That's when heaven is literally going to descend to earth, but we still have much work to do. And this is why it is so important to resolve this conflict between naturalist science and religious traditions right now, so that we can move on with the job of making that phase of intuitive mind, spiritual mind.
I attended a lecture by David Wilcox, and he was showing on a diagram that every approximately 12,000 years, there's a real burst in speciation. And I noticed that you address the same thing in this book, that there seems to be a quantum leap in speciation rather than a gradual change that Darwin might have predicted. Do you have any ideas about what might be behind that data? I mean,
The data suggests that there is no fossil record of transition in macroevolution. How the last reptile became the first bird, you really have to imagine. I mean, imagine a reptile egg breaking up and something is flying out from it. And that's very impossible to imagine, because so much change is required for changing from a reptile into a flying animal. So that much change requires a lot and lot and lot and lot of time. Instead, what we see is that there is no time at all, because there is no fossil means that no time virtually elapses in this period, geologically speaking. So what has produced such a fast era, fast epoch of evolution? And this is where quantum physics comes in, and my idea is that evolution is creative, and literally what happens is a creative quantum leap, the discontinuous transition, instantaneous discontinuous transition that takes place, that takes the species from one stasis to another stasis, which is very different from this one, because many, many genes have changed, have mutated and changed.
And you also, in the book, use the idea of Shiva with the destruction and creation always coming together, that the idea that, say when the dinosaurs got wiped out, perhaps because of that asteroid strike, there was a destructive phase that then allowed the mammals to come up. So this intense creative phase is often associated with a destructive phase.
Exactly. And biologists know this aspect very well, because it is true that mammals were already there on the scene, but the growth of the mammals were being enormously impeded because dinosaurs ruled the world. They were so huge and they were eating up the food supply so very well that nobody else could compete with them. And then all of a sudden we find the dinosaurs disappeared. Now, it's still a little mystery. The asteroid answer probably is the best answer so far. But how does such a thing happen? Carl Jung had a concept called synchronicity, that things in the physical world and things in the internal mental, vital, supramental world can be precipitated by the same consciousness. If we introduce that kind of idea, we can see that the meteor shower that destroyed the dinosaurs is a synchronicity, not just chance coincidence. Synchronicity by which consciousness precipitated the evolution of the mammals. So there are other ways of thinking of evolution that helps us to integrate the two views. Integrate, and we are better for it because the science starts making more sense. Otherwise, these incidents, repeated incidents of whenever you see great bursts of evolution, it's always preceded by a huge era of extinction. That kind of thing just remains coincidence. But when something is a repeated pattern, it could not be a coincidence. So what produces this destruction-creation together, the Shiva's dance, as the Hindus call it? What produces it is that it's the same consciousness which is precipitating them both. Synchronicity. That's how to explain it.
So we have in many different religious traditions and prophecy traditions descriptions from way far back that we're currently living in a time that is one of these harvests, or one of these, the wheat being separated from the chaff in the biblical quotes. But it's similar in other traditions too. So what do you think that they're pointing towards now? I mean, what's happening now that's, say, different than several hundred years ago?
Well, I think that several hundred years ago was also, of course, a very great thing was coming about. Science was being created. So several hundred years ago, if you put the date so close, then I could answer very well, because this is all documented. In Middle Ages, it's mm-hmm. not documented very well. But this part we know very well, that is modern science came about, and modern science broke the doldrum that the dominance of that dogma, Christian dogma, created in the Western world especially. And that was very important, because nothing was moving. The world was so neglected in the Christian view that nothing could move. The economic power, right. political power was with only very few people, the kings and dukes, and their interest was the only thing. Everybody else was serfs, and they didn't have any power. And this situation made social progress, any evolution in human consciousness, impossible. So science became very, very imperative, and the movements of consciousness created science. And the history is, of course, well known: Copernicus, Galileo, Newton, all these people. And they had the wonderful idea that, well, maybe science is the way of the world, and mind is the territory of God. So there was a truce called modernism between the two views. Mind is where then religions could have a role, that part of the internal experiences of people, and science was assumed to have nothing to do much with that. Science was led mm-hmm. to the external world. But then everything changed when Darwin started talking about evolution. Because the idea before was that the humans are the only conscious beings with mind, animals are machines. But Darwin showed that human beings came from monkeys, animals. Mm. So therefore, if animals are machines, then human beings also got machines. So this machine view started dominating everything, that everything is just mechanical machine, including human beings, including animals. So if everything is machine, if matter is everything, then of course we live in a very deterministic world, and we don't need any God. God is not needed. So Nietzsche declared God is dead. So that's why my book started right. God is not dead, because God is dead from the Newtonian Darwinian view. But if you put right. the quantum view back in it, then God is revived, mm-hmm. because we need downward causation as much as we need upward causation.
So in the quantum world, let's talk a little bit more about quantum physics, because I think that's an area that many listeners might be a little bit rusty in. Speak a little bit about how quantum theory talks about possibilities, and then what actually causes the drop from many possibilities into an actuality. What is that, and what, because you speak about that directly in your book. I think that's sure. That's an important point.
That is the starting point, and that probably is the most important point. The mm-hmm. whole revolution that quantum physics brings to Newtonian Darwinian thinking can be understood just from the beginning of quantum physics. Quantum physics says, fundamental thing. It is this wave-particle duality. Objects are waves before they become particles. The objects are waves of possibility. And quantum physics had to answer the question, where do these possibility waves reside? And the answer comes in a surprising way. The answer is that the possibilities could not be part of space-time reality. They live outside of So in this way, Newtonian Darwinism refutes something that the spiritual traditions have been saying for millennia, which is reality has two levels, transcendent and immanent. Even in esoteric Christianity, every tradition, every spiritual religious tradition accepts that implicitly. Although in popular thinking, we introduce words like heaven and earth, and then because of our poverty of understanding the word transcendence, we begin to think of heaven as outer space or something like that. And
right.
that causes a lot of confusion. So Christianity is whole popular Christianity is a whole bundle of confusion. I don't need to refute it, that there are enough debunkers who have done a good job on it. And nobody is devising Christianity, those popular Christian versions of God. So that point left aside, look at what quantum physics is saying. Quantum physics, first thing quantum physics is saying is give you a solid evidence that yes, there is a transcendent after all. That's the realm of potentiality, possibilities from which actualities come. And then the second question, what brings actuality? What happened was very interesting. Von Neumann, a great mathematician, proved a theorem that material interactions cannot even change possibility into actuality. No material interaction, showed von Neumann, can ever change possibility into actuality. So it's impossible to stay within the dogma that matter is everything and solve this quantum measurement problem. However much sophisticated views, many worlds and what have you, they cannot save scientific materialism, the idea that everything is matter, because of this theorem. No material interaction can ever change possibility into actuality. So what then produces actuality? We have to postulate downward causation. We have to have a source of downward causation. What is that source? The only conceivable way of thinking about it is that that source must be a transcendent, non-local source that precipitates the immanent. Transcendent is not separate from the immanent. Transcendent becomes immanent. How? Change of this possibility into actuality. So this is the event of collapse that physicists talk about, collapse of the wave into particle. This single concept, we have gained virtually everything that the spiritual traditions have been saying for millennia using very confusing notions like transcendent and immanent. But look, the main idea of reality was rediscovered by Freud at the end of 19th century, as you know, unconscious. And that is the same two domains of reality. So religious people are talking about transcendent immanent, psychology is talking about unconscious conscious, now quantum physics is talking about domain of potentiality and domain of actuality. Three times should be the charm. And people should get used to it now that, look, there are two domains. Scientists are wrong thinking that nature is just this time world. There is just one realm of reality. This is wrong thinking. It does not give us right answers, even for science. So we should give that up. We should realize there are two domains of reality. One is potentiality, the other is actuality. And it takes downward causation to bring potentiality into actuality. Then everything becomes clear.
So how do you see this, if we're in a period of this intense change, what do you see in the future? How are things going to be different when we get through this period of change? What do you see happening in terms of what the world looks like?
I think what is happening already, what you can see is that this gives us a scope to understand all of our experiences. What we have been emphasizing for the last 60 years is the material domain of reality. We have gone too far in the swing of the pendulum. Before, it was only the transcendent, only God, only spirit that produced us the middle-aged doldrum. Now it is the opposite trend, tendency. Everything is only the immanent is being given emphasis. We have forgotten about the transcendent values. And so what we have is a very mixed up situation. Truth itself has become relative. Look at this. Scientists who proposed this idea of scientific materialism are saying truth is relative because there is no timeless truth, right? The timeless truth depends on the idea that there is reality outside of space and time. If nothing is timeless, there cannot be anything that is absolute. So the idea of absolute truth is gone from science. And if that is the case, then what prevents somebody from Fox News, say Rush Limbaugh, to declare that, no, there is no evolution. No, there is no global climate change. Scientists get irate. But why should they get irate? They themselves have started the idea that truth is relative. Without the idea of absolute truth, we cannot even do science. So it is very vitally important to bring these ideas back of a transcendent reality, that there are absolute values. These are the archetypal values that Plato talked about, that Jung talked about. And these values are the important aspects of civilization. Without these values, there is no civilization. Civilization is the progressive increase of these values in the way that we live.
Now, in Chapter 20, you introduce the idea of quantum activism. And I think that this is a very important concept of how we, meaning humanity, needs to start changing in order to project a better future and actually avoid some of the probable futures that, you know, are in our movies, like, you know, the worldwide destruction with nuclear weapons and the global warming to the extreme and all of these other things. You know, it's interesting, our movies can project into other possibility worlds if we don't make the right choices in this world. It's very interesting.
Right. And people have to face up to that what would happen if we continue in this way. I mean, the way that terrorism has grown in the last 15, 20 years is very alarming. And the possibility of terrorists get hold of a nuke, and especially religious terrorists who have different notions of reality, like God is the only thing and the world doesn't matter, they could start very well, blowing it all up. Because killing innocent people, there is no taboo against it anymore. Love is relative, truth is relative, there is no value of nonviolence. So this has become a real, real problem. And we should recognize it. What we have done with this scientific materialism, it's an idea that is literally as dangerous as the idea of religious bigotry. And this has to be recognized. When dogmas start ruling us, and when two dogmas collide, and that's what is happening now, Democrats, Republicans, they have each a dogma to preserve. Democrats are in the side of the scientific materialist dogma, and the Republicans are in the side of the Christian religious dogma. And there is no total impasse. There is no coming to terms with each other until they begin to see that science itself is proposing an integration, because God operates on integration. It's God's world, after all. So if we start looking at this way, we immediately can start changing. But how to do it will require some activism. Why? Because the vested interest of both religion and materialist science is enormous. Materialist science is a huge enterprise. It's a billions and billions and billions of dollars. Academe and scientific research and government and technology, you know, it's huge. And similarly, the religious enterprise also, if you count all the numbers, you will be surprised at how huge that enterprise is as a business enterprise. Huge amounts of transactions and money are involved. So just the vested interests themselves are never going to allow themselves to change without some real activism. It is the activism of the 17th, 18th century that really produced democracy, capitalism, and liberal education. You have to go back to that and remember that without activism, we would not have the modern era. We would not have modernism. We would not have that truce between religion and science that led to the Age of Enlightenment and all the progress that we have made in human civilization in the last 300 years. So similarly, right now, we have to have activism to produce the same kind of changes that a new paradigm will bring. A new phase of civilization can begin.
Yeah, and if you read Return of the Revolutionaries, which I've actually interviewed that author on this show, you may also begin to understand that at least some of the groups that come in, the people that came in around the American Revolution time may be back now as leaders within the spiritual revolution, you know, the New Age revolution in thinking anyway. So, you know, the same people may be sent in again and again because they're good at it, you know, just like Mozart was good at writing symphonies, the revolutionaries, the quantum activists, maybe the same group, you know.
Yeah, it could very well be. You know, quantum physics itself and I, of course, support the idea of this reincarnation, people coming in over and over again, literally. So yes, I mean, that would be, of course, in spirit, that it's the same spirit, the evolutionary spirit that guides all activism. The founders of America were absolutely, they were quantum activists, whether they would call themselves or not, because quantum physics was not known at the time, but they did the impossible. They established democracy when the idea was just not even widely appreciated. It was a fantastic achievement.
I have a theory that of what might be coming. I believe that a significant number of people are going to raise their vibratory level to the point where they can get direct inspiration and direct information from the higher levels, so that billions and billions of dollars that we spend on scientific research may be obsolete if we can tap directly into like what we need to know and bring it directly in. You don't have to do much science.
That's certain. The good news is that we are already doing that. I mean, that is what creativity is all about. It's a direct message from higher consciousness. And using the problem that we have is that we have the creativity. We are bringing in the creativity. We are discovering the new science, the new paradigm. But the problem is that we still have to instill it, and that installation requires activism. It required activism 300 years ago. It will require activism now. Changes have never come without some sort of activism. You know, we just have to recognize that. Well, this time we have internet in our favor. We have worldwide communication. Maybe the activism will be less violent because we have evolved since 300 years. But that's the only hope that we have. On the other hand, it can even be more violent because it is true that 300 years ago nukes were not available, but now nukes are. And this existence of nukes changes the equation of how much violence that can occur all of a sudden.
Yeah, but I think nukes were allowed in order to emphasize a point. I think with the existence of nukes in the world, we don't have the luxury of doing this slowly. Do you see?
Right.
I think it speeds everything up. You know, it becomes very much a crisis. And things get done during a crisis that take longer if the crisis situation is not there. Now, in your chapter 20, the quantum activism, I really want to emphasize to the readers that this description of quantum activism has a lot to do with what the work you do on yourself. It's actually from within that these changes are made. Isn't that right?
Yes. It is changing oneself as one changes the environment, as one changes the society. Because that's how the quantum effects work. Quantum effects work through individuals. Yeah, if individuals start recognizing that they are individuals as well as they have a we consciousness, there is an I consciousness that is individual, but that individual is rooted in the we consciousness that is unitive, that is quantum consciousness that the ancient people call God. When we realize ourselves this way, what happens is that a profound change takes place, that when the more we are rooted in our individuality, the more we want to become we. So we become concerned about the rest of the society. We become concerned about other people. We cannot ignore them anymore. And this is the difference between the traditional religions, who tend to be very selfish in terms of social duty. You just look at the Republicans today and you will see that they talk about values, but they don't support charity. So, you know, these are just anachronisms. How can people talk about value, love, and then not support charity? But they don't. So this some kind of selfishness comes naturally if you don't see the wider view. So quantum activism, from the get-go, because you are transforming yourself using the quantum principles, and the quantum principles are very clear, non-locality. You are one with everything. Discontinuity. You have to take creative quantum leaps in order to achieve change. So change is not easy. Tangled hierarchy, that's another concept where you have to see the other as cogent, causally powerful as you are. So you have to allow other people to have causal power if you want to have causal power yourself. Democracy is only the beginning of this idea. Democracy, we still have representational sharing of the power of the people. It has to come much more deeply into the society, and that will happen when this quantum physical idea of tangled hierarchical relationship comes in and becomes the going thing in society. We already see the beginnings of it in the abolition of sexism, abolition of racism, and now evolutionism, bringing in the gays and allowing them to get married. And how wonderful the development it is, I cannot, you know, my heart opens up every time I think of it. I mean, marriage is a commitment for exploring love. And now we are allowing gay people to explore love. I mean, this is a fantastic thing. It's like saying that, okay, for Hindus, untouchables can explore God directly without going through Brahmins. Mm-hmm. It's tremendous achievement of progress.
And in medicine, I'm seeing the shift in medicine as well, from a hierarchical, you know, where the doctor tells the patient what to do and the patient does it, to a more tangled hierarchy where the energy, you know, the energy of the patient and the energy of the doctor interact with one another in order to bring up the answers to what caused the disease, which is critical. I mean, if you don't know what causes something, you're not going to be that successful in treating it. You're just going to have a bunch of side effects of medications, I think, which is pretty much what the old system is seeing. You know, now we're seeing that the statins that were the statin drugs that were so pounded into everybody that you need to be on a statin now may cause high blood sugar with a black box warning, as well as now accidents and problems during surgery. Those are the latest two that came out in the last couple of weeks. So the idea here is that there's not one hammer, you know, the idea if your only tool is a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. We can't do that anymore. We can't use one thing to treat everything. We have to, you know, we have to actually have this tangled hierarchy relationship between the doctor and the patient in order to get the truth to come out and not harm the patient further.
And also we have to be aware of our whole being. What lacks also is when we depend on too much on the pharmaceutical drugs to give us good health is that we ignore the dimensions of our being. The vital energies are very important, and that is not recognized at all in the standard allopathic medicine. And that is a fundamentally an incompleteness of the healing procedure. As we pay more attention to the vital energies in terms of like Chinese medicine or Indian medicine or homeopathy, these medicines are vital energy medicines. As you put this back into the equation of people caring for themselves, we can prevent a lot of this stuff. I mean, statin drug is a good example. Statin drug is basically being sold as a preventive drug, and it does do a good job in preventing cholesterol in the arteries. That's a fine idea. But the problem is that, of course, the vital energies are equally involved in the process. There are arteries in the physical, but there are also meridians in the vital world. And these meridians are blocked up too. They get blocked up because we are blocked up in our emotional existence. So clearing up emotions and clearing them up not only with our work on psychology, but also work with vital energy, this can help us greatly too. Just as statin prevents cholesterol buildup, similarly, vital energy work can prevent the emotional block-up of these arteries, quote-unquote, in the vital world, in the region. This concept, this education has to be brought to the public that we have to take care of not only the physical body by preventive drugs that have arisen, and moreover, of course, the physical has side effects. The vital, the advantage of it is that if you clear up your emotion, it don't cost you anything. There is no side effect of vital energy medicine. So all this has to be brought in the awareness of people, and this is why we need activism.
Right. We're coming up on the end of our hour here. Would you like to give your contact information?
Okay, the easiest one is my website, Amit Goswami, AmitGoswami.org. So if you open that website, you'll find an email. You can write to me. I usually answer it, although perhaps with a time delay. But I do answer my email. And please look up at the website. There are books, videos, and all kinds of things to get you a glimpse at what is going on, at least in this quantum physicist corner. And there are many like me which are leading this shift of paradigm. It's coming. Good news everywhere. So become a quantum activist if you can.
Well, we've been interviewing Dr. Amit Goswami, a quantum physicist and a doctor who is bringing a great deal of, I guess, synthesis between seemingly opposing viewpoints, reminding us that whenever we have these opposing viewpoints, we just simply don't understand what's going on, and there's a higher view that you can take. And he uses, in a very eloquent manner, quantum physics to demonstrate how we can bring these things together and how we can understand them. And then with the idea of quantum activism, how we can actually bring it into our own lives and see it manifest in our own lives, get direct proof, which in spirituality is very important. You shouldn't ever just believe other people because they say it. You need to bring it into your life and manifest it, experience the synchronicities, and really understand it from within. Dr. Goswami, would you like to leave our listeners with any words of wisdom today?
Okay, well, absolutely. I'd love to. The new scientific idea, when it proves that God is not dead, it proves some very, very important thing. Probably the most important thing about them, about the new science, is that it divides the idea of timeless values. Because if there is a transcendent reality, if there is a non-local consciousness, if there is a domain of quantum possibility waves, then you have to agree that that domain is outside of space and time. There's just no question about it. Quantum physics has direct evidence that is proved by thousands and thousands, literally, of experimental data. There is no question that there are these waves of possibility, that's the nature of matter, and they reside in domain outside of space and time. So if you accept that there is these two domains of reality, then it becomes clear that the domain outside of space and time is where these timeless values are. Why are the values that we discover and live, why are they time-bound? Because what we are discovering is a mental representation of this timeless value. So when we say that, well, truth seems to be changing because our scientific laws have changed, or love is changing because the concept of love has evolved, we are missing the point. We are missing the point that what we live in the immanent world are representations of the timeless truth, timeless love, and that those representations evolve. It's not that there is no timeless truth because of evolution. It's that we can never mean an absolute representation of the absolute. The representation is always relative, but just because the representation is relative and it evolves is no reason to throw out the absolute. So the biggest danger we see from both scientific materialism and from the religious side, is because it's too simplistic for our modern mind, and the scientific side because it's too narrow. It's too much of a straitjacket to put yourself in, because if you deny timeless truth, you cannot really even do science. So then controversies arise, like Fox News versus the mainstream media, and how do you resolve it if truth is relative? So come back to the notion of absolute values. absolute ideas, and quantum physics helps you doing that. Become a quantum activist, you discover this thing directly, and then they will become forces in your own life, and you can transform, you can change. You will see. It's not so easy, but it is not so difficult either. Thank you.
It should be a lot of fun, too.
Yes.
You're exploring a world that is different, you know, that is more magical, more that it explains the miracles, for one thing. That's what I find. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Goswami. I really appreciate it. We've been interviewing Dr. Amit Goswami, quantum physicist, on his book, God is Not Dead. And I highly encourage you to read this and read about quantum activism and his other books as well. He explores a vast range of very important concepts in spirituality, science, and consciousness research. And that's why we keep having him back on the show, because he's a very important part of this quantum revolution. Next week, please join us for Dr. Eric Love, Healing the Heart and Mind, and then Tricia McKinnon will be on the 22nd to talk about her book on Jesus, and then Rick Stack on the 29th, The Secret to Healing Cancer. Again, Dr. Goswami, thank you very much for joining us, and join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.